The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, and Dayton Metro Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. I'd like to welcome to the program today Dennis Turner. He joins us in studio. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Vic.
Dennis, I see you've written a book, and it's got a really long title. It's called What Did You Do in the War, Sister? How Catholic Nuns in Belgium Defied and Deceived the Nazis in World War II. Is this your first book?
This is my first book of anything like this. I have written legal book and law review articles, but it's the first venture into this kind of genre, yes.
So the question is, how did you suddenly decide to write a book like this?
Well, it was completely a coincidence. We were having lunch with a Sister of Notre Dame friend, her name Sister Kim Dahlgren. And she has been a friend for a long time, and she taught our children at Chaminade Julienne and taught with my wife Kathleen at CJ. And so she was at lunch, and she also happens to be the chief archivist for the Sisters of Notre Dame in the Midwest. And she was organizing the archives in Cincinnati. During this discussion, she said she had just uncovered in a file drawer about a whole treasure trove of letters and other materials written by the Sisters of Notre Dame during the German occupation of Italy and Belgium and shortly thereafter. And she was telling me some of the things they were doing. And these letters have lied there for 60 years. Nobody had seen them before. And so she was telling me what the kind of things they were doing as part of the resistance to the German occupation. And I said, wow, that sounds like it could be a book. So Sister Kim said, well, would you look at them and give me your thoughts about such a book? And then the story varies a little bit. I sort of say, well, after the second glass of wine, I said, well, I might even write the book. And Sister Kim, being a force of nature, within 3 days, she has digitized 500 pages of documents and sent them to me. And then I read them, and I thought, wow, this is the makings of a good book. And that's how it got started. And I was at a time in life in which I needed a distraction. I was very upset about the state of our country and the elections and what was going on. And I needed some distraction, and it came just at a perfect time that way.
You need a distraction from what?
From the state of our country. I'm pretty depressed about, and you know by the nature of this book, is because it seems like we're going down the same path that Europe went down in the 30s in terms of turning people into us and thems and we're going down that same path, and it's very depressing to me to think about that because I had much higher expectations for my country, I guess.
Mm. My guest is Dennis Turner. His book is What Did You Do in the War, Sister? I read the book, and I kept saying to myself, this seems very factual. Is this nonfiction or fiction, or is it a blend? What is this?
I like to call it imaginative nonfiction. And by that I mean most of the events and most of the incidents that are talked about happened, and I have original documentation for those, either in the letters or other documents that I've used. But rather than just sort of dryly, as an historian, talk about scenes and what happened and this happened and that happened, I thought it would be more interesting to have a fictional narrator, Sister Christina, tell the story and tell it in a more personalized way. And then I would insert a dialogue in that to sort of flesh out a scene that happened, but I would create a dialogue that I would think was probably like the dialogue that occurred to make it a more interesting read. Also, I was faced with the challenge of these letters and other documents described events in convents in Belgium and Italy and all different places. So you had a multiple venue situation. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me it had been like a shotgun approach of just trying to say, well, this happened over here and that's happened over there. So by creating a fictional order of nuns and creating a fictional narrator, I was able to coalesce those varied incidents into one major location or two locations, the city of Namur in Belgium and the city of Saint-Hubert or the town of Saint-Hubert in Belgium, where a lot of the events did take place, but I was able to incorporate events that occurred in a convent in Italy and superimpose it in Belgium.
I see. So you transposed some of the historical events and just put them all together in the same location.
That is correct.
Oh, wow.
And
how fun.
Yeah, well, it was fun, and it made it easy to tell the story. And then because I am somewhat trained as an historian, I was a history major in college, I felt it incumbent upon me to alert the readers where it was me and what I had original documentation for. So I produced an extensive list of endnotes in which I indicate what is true or what is history or what I least – what is history, it's always a question – at least what I have original documentation for, and what is it that I made up that is my creation, because I wanted to separate those two.
Gotcha. All right, Dennis. So we have this narrator, Sister Christina. Was this your invention that she is an American and came from Ohio? Did you create all this in your mind? I think it's a great device if it is created.
Well, I created it in my mind in the sense I knew from the records there were American nuns that were trapped in Europe in this order, in the Order of Sisters of Notre Dame during the war. They were trapped there. And so I knew that that part was accurate. Then I created them out of a whole cloth, Sister Christina. I wanted a sister with an edge. And then I thought, now, what kind of young woman would you want with you in occupied Germany or occupied Belgium, dealing with the occupation, and be a nun? And I thought, a Fort Laramie farm girl. And I have some experience with them. I have cousins who are raised on farms in near Fort Laramie, Ohio, and I have quite a few relatives up there. And in fact, some of my cousins are sort of vying for who is most like Sister Christina. Mm-hmm. Who am I? Well, I really was more of a composite of cousins that I knew, and they have the kind of intelligence, resourcefulness. They don't intimidate easily. They are physically strong as well. And they don't – religion is an important part of the culture there, but they aren't dogmatic about it. Uh-huh. So, I mean, they kind of those kind of characteristics I thought would be appropriate for Sister Christina.
Well, I think your cousin who ended up becoming a nun is going to win that contest. I'm just kidding. My guest is Dennis Turner. Okay, we have some listeners out there, believe it or not, Dennis, who don't know the history. They don't know what happened in Belgium as World War II was beginning. They don't know about the German occupation. Give us the historical bottom line here. What was happening? And then we can get into your account.
Well, what was happening is of course, the war started in September of 1939 with the invasion of Poland by the Germans and then the declaration of war by the French and the English. And but nothing really happened on the Western Front until 1940, the spring of 1940. And Belgium was in a very tricky position. They were neutral. All the countries, including Germany, had signed off that Belgium was neutral and they would honor Belgium's neutrality. But, of course, the problem that Belgium has is it's a great tank country. I mean, it's the logical place the Germans would launch an invasion. So the Belgian king was trying to walk a tightrope of along those lines. He could not invite the British and the French in because that would essentially be a declaration of war against the Germans, and then that would invite the Germans' invasion. And, of course, he didn't want the Germans' invasion. So he was trying to walk that tightrope, and he basically said to the Germans, if you violate our border, I'm opening the border to the French and the British, and they'll let them come in. Well, the French and the British were waiting on the Belgian border. When the Germans did invade in May of 1940, then the French and the British rushed forward to defend Belgium, thinking that it was going to be like World War I, with a stalemate and trenches and all that sort of thing. So they rush in to defend Belgium. And what a lot of people now know, of course, is the German attack came, the real attack came through the Ardennes with an armored attack, surrounded the French and the British got trapped in Belgium. And then you have the Dunkirk scene. So it was at that point they occupied Belgium. The Germans occupied Belgium and then occupied it until the fall of 1944.
You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Dennis J. Turner. His book is What Did You Do in the War, Sister? How Catholic Nuns in Belgium Defied and Deceived the Nazis in World War II. The Book Nook will continue right after this. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958. It's the Book Nook, and my guest is Dennis J. Turner. His book is What Did You Do in the War, Sister? Okay, we're talking about Catholic nuns in Belgium, and one nun in particular who's narrating in this work of historical nonfiction, fictional historical nonfiction.
Imaginative nonfiction.
Okay, very imaginative nonfiction from Dennis J. Turner. Let's talk about our nun, Christina, where she is at in her mind. She's watching the Germans invade, and she's kind of in a special position because she speaks all these different languages, and she's in a great position to be our narrator.
Yes, and that was another reason I picked the farm girl from Fort Laramie, because there is a very large German population, and it would be very common to have grandparents who spoke nothing but German. So she was fluent in German, English, and then French, and then she also had farm skills. So she had a lot of things that I think would be very useful in that time of occupation, especially if you're part of the resistance.
And this convent, let's talk about this order of nuns, what they were like, how the order was set up, what their practices were, and what kind of treasures they were trying to protect.
Well, the order was founded in 1809, originally in France, and then they moved the mother house to Belgium because the French bishop was sort of an obstreperous kind of guy and wasn't going to give them sort of the license to open up schools and that. And the bishop in the more Belgium said, hey, essentially, why don't you come up here? And so they did, and they established a mother house in the Moor, and it became a very large order of nuns. And this would be the Sisters of Notre Dame, which again is the inspiration for this book. But my book talks about a fictional order of nuns, but the Sisters of Notre Dame, this is their history, and they established schools all over the world. They had schools, 26 schools and convents in Belgium alone, and they had schools and convents in France and the United States and Asia and Africa. So they were a very, very large religious order. And the treasure that they had goes back to the early 19th century when a treasure that was being held by a monastery. Of course, those were the times when things were rather unsettled in Europe. And they were asked to take possession or to hide this treasure that had been originally a part of a monastery's treasure. So they took possession of that for all those years. It is a tremendous art collection. It is considered the sixth most valuable collection in Belgium of art. And they took this for, in terms of stewards, for hundreds of years. In the war, when the war came and the Germans occupied Belgium, the Germans from the very beginning, I think, had an eye on the artworks of Europe and how they might be able to add to the collection. So one of the things that happened very early on after the occupation is that the sisters got a visitor from a general who was said ostensibly he was there to help preserve treasures. And where was your treasure?
Yeah.
Well, Sister Superior, knew better than that. And she asked, why does it you need to be protected? Why does it need protection? And says, actually, I don't know where it is because, you bombed our convent and it's probably buried under the rubble someplace. Mm-hmm. Of course, she had actually had it moved before because she had been experienced in World War I. And so she knew that it's a good thing to go and hide your treasures from the Germans. And so she played dumb, and this treasure stayed hidden during the war and then was again brought out of hiding after the war.
The book is What Did You Do in the War, Sister? Dennis Turner wrote it. He joins us on the program today. I love the fact that this book reads like a thriller, like an espionage novel. And after the Germans invade Belgium, this order of nuns becomes very involved in doing things that the Germans would not approve of. And the nuns are perfect to do all kinds of things because they wear these big flowing habits. They can conceal all kinds of stuff in there. And they can conceal all kinds of people inside their convent. They are ingenious. You have this wonderful setup where your narrator gets to be the gatekeeper, and they keep expecting bad people to show up. Tell us about this.
Well, they did, and according to the documents that I have, had in the one convent that was being talked about a very extensive system for hiding people. They behind the organ and in the cellars and then in the attics, and so they had an extensive place to hide. But of course, the problem that they face is if there was a unexpected visit by German SS or Gestapo, the folks would have to have time to get the hide because they didn't keep him in those places all day long. They would go on crazy. So they had built an alarm system which would be triggered and then give them time or at least a little more time to hide. And then in my story, in the letters, what was said was that they sent out a young Swiss nun to talk to the Germans, to delay them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I played some poetic license on that, I must admit. I'd say, young Swiss nun, what could be implied by that? And I'm a lawyer, so that's some circumstantial evidence on my part.
Okay.
So I create the scene, and this is my scene, in which Sister Christina previously is told by the sister, a sister superior, about delaying these Germans and says, have you ever flirted? And, of course, Sister Christina at first is pretty much aghast at that she would be asked, you're asking me to flirt with a German soldier. And Sister Superior, you follow orders. And so she practiced a little bit of flirting. And so the first time the Germans come, and it's a young German officer, and she tries out just slightly kind of flirting because she's got a, it's a tightrope, right?
Mm-hmm.
She, if she's obvious, that sends the wrong signal. It's got to be ambiguous. It's got and just enough to sort of the officer to do a double take. Like, did that really happen? And so I create that scene, and she successfully helps delay the inspection of the convent and the school for about 4 minutes, which then gives everyone enough time to hide.
I kept getting flashes of Hogan's Heroes. I'm sorry, I did. Particularly when you have the device, and maybe I shouldn't give this away, but you have this setup where the Germans come to this door after they've made it into the convent, and they're searching the place, and there's one area where they're hiding people. And as soon as they open the door, here's a nun sitting on the commode, which immediately makes the Germans and like, oh, well, I guess we won't search this area. Very clever, very Hogan's Hero-esque in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And who were they hiding? Who were these people they were hiding and why?
Well, the people they were hiding mostly at first were Belgium men and women who had to go under cover. The men, a lot of the men went undercover because the Germans had issued an order in which all the Belgian men needed to go to Germany to work in German factories, essentially slave labor. So they had to make a decision whether they were going to do that. So some of them went underground. There was also the beginning of the persecution and the identification and ostracizing of the Jewish population. And so a number of them had to go into hiding. And as the oppression of the Jewish population increased, more and more Jews had no choice. They either had to join the resistance or they had to go into hiding, go underground, or they were going to be transported. So that was the folks who they were hiding. They would some people would just come to the convent without any escort and ask for refuge. And so they would take people in, and some of convents had a very large number of people who were in hiding, which raises all kinds of logistical problems, and you got to feed them and that sort of thing.
Mm. And later on, if you've seen your war movies, you know that Belgium was a big overflight area. British and American planes were flying over to bomb Germany, to do attacks various places, and a lot of them were getting shot down over Belgium. So you had aviators parachuting into Belgium. Lots of them were being captured by the German occupiers. But then you had the ones that were not. And you talked about the moral dilemma that Sister Christine was experiencing, having to flirt. Well, these pilots created a much greater dilemma for her. And this is where we really get into that cloak and dagger espionage part of the book.
And I do want to raise, and I intentionally wanted to raise the moral issues involved. It's because here is a sister who has been trained and certainly not trained to do violence to anyone. But she was another task she had when these pilots would come to the convent for hiding, be part of what was called the Comet Line, and they would be passed on. And not a lot of pilots got picked up by the resistance. Most of the pilots were picked up by German soldiers. But the Germans knew about this, so they started trying to infiltrate the Comet Line by having English-speaking Germans pretend they were American pilots. So Sister Christina's job was given, being the American and knowing about American culture, was to vet them when they came to the convent and to test them about their Americanism, how American they were. And it was relatively easy for her because she was an American, spoke good English, and such, obviously good English, and could vet them on simple stuff that almost every American would know. So she would determine whether or not they were truly Americans or not. If she decided that they were not Americans, she would tell the resistance person who brought them, saying, oh, well, we can't put them up for the night. You need to move them on to another safe house. That was the signal to the resistance that he was German. And ultimately, you would expect that was the end of that individual's life.
It was a death sentence.
It was a death sentence. Mm-hmm. And this was traumatic, I think, for Sister Christina, because she knew that it was a death sentence. And you would naturally have second thoughts like, what if I was wrong?
Uh-huh.
I just, condemned. And even if I'm right, I'm condemning another person to death. And that is against everything I've ever been trained or learned to do as a sister. And now I have to essentially do that. And so that was a difficult time for Sister Christina.
Well, in this vetting of these German infiltrators, I think I found my favorite part of the entire book. And that was where they find this German who claims he's from Boston, and he doesn't really have a very authentic Boston accent. And then when he says he likes the Yankees, I mean, that was a death sentence for that guy. And that was my favorite part of the book, but I am slightly biased. My guest is Dennis Turner. His book is What Did You Do in the War, Sister? How Catholic Nuns in Belgium Defied and Deceived the Nazis in World War II. And later this morning, you can meet Dennis. He's doing a presentation, and he'll be at St. Mark Bookstore in Centerville. That's 895 South Main Street in Centerville at 10 o'clock this morning, June 2nd, Saturday. And he'll be there from 10 until 1, and he'll be talking about the book as he is right now and signing copies of the book. That's St. Mark Bookstore, 895 South Main Street in Centerville. This morning, June 2nd, Saturday, 10 a.m. until 1 o'clock. And don't you have some other event coming up soon, too?
Yes. On June 12th, I will be doing a talk for the League of Women Voters down at the Webster Street Market. And information about that, I will be talking about the book and obviously selling some books. And it includes a dinner. And information about that can be obtained through the League of Women Voters of Dayton website.
You've been doing a lot of publicity for the book. How's that been for you?
It's been fun. And I have met, Vic, some of the most interesting people through this book who hear something about it and want to meet me and talk. For example, just the other day, a gentleman called and wanted to have lunch with me. His name was Bob Kahn. I had known Bob a little bit before. Bob is a survivor. He had an amazing story. He had just written a book, and he wanted to talk to me about my book. But his story is unbelievable. I mean, his escape from Luxembourg and going across the Pyrenees on a bike, and then his service in the East against the Japanese, and of course being in Germany during Kristallnacht and the whole business. I mean, he had an incredible story, and so I had a wonderful opportunity just to sit and talk and hear his story. He's 95 and still very, very sharp. And again, that came about serendipitously because I wrote this book.
I only have one question, Dennis. Who paid for lunch?
I paid for lunch.
Good man. Good man. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Dennis J. Turner. His book is What Did You Do in the War, Sister? How Catholic Nuns in Belgium Defied and Deceived the Nazis in World War II. The Book Nook will continue right after this. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and my guest in studio is Dennis J. Turner. His book is What Did You Do in the War, Sister? How Catholic Nuns in Belgium Defied and Deceived the Nazis in World War II. Dennis, I found out about this book by being in Yellow Springs one day, and someone I know in town came up to me, and she said, "You've got to read this book. You've got to read this book." And I said, okay. And she pulled it out and she held it in front of me. And I looked at it and I said, well, that looks interesting. And she goes, you've got to read this book. And her name was Andre Bognar. And I see that she's mentioned in your book. Tell me about this.
Well, Andre was the first of many individuals that I have met just in a serendipitous manner that helped me work on this book and actually gave me encouragement to keep going because it meant seemed like it meant that this book needed to be. And I met Andre, again, through an unusual set of circumstances in which I was the facilitator for our jurist in residence at the law school when we invite distinguished jurors from around the world to come and spend a week at the law school. And we have dinner with them, and we have local people meet them, local people. Well, at one dinner, an individual who was not on the original guest list but was a substitute for the original guest, and I didn't know at all, came to the dinner. During the course of the dinner, I mentioned about this book. After the dinner, she says, you have to talk to my friend in Yellow Springs, Andre Bognar. She says, because she was in occupied Belgium during the war. And I said, okay. And so Kathy, my wife, and I came out. We had lunch with Andre. She is totally delightful. She gave us lots of information. And she says, oh, are you going to Belgium? How would you like to meet my two sisters? That sounds wonderful. So she arranged us to meet her two sisters, Mimi and Teresa, in Louvain, Belgium, and we had lunch, and they showed us around, another delightful conversation. And what they added to the book, and I incorporated their story into the book about how they rode across Belgium on their bikes, but a lot of the importance of my conversation is they provided really good context of what it was like to grow up during German occupation. How did you deal with German soldiers? How did your parents protect you from, what was happening and that? And so they gave me lots of, background context information. Just delightful people.
My guest is Dennis J. Turner. Dennis, we have some listeners out there who are kind of scratching their heads right now going, he just referred to some law school, and they're probably wondering what you're talking about because we were talking about what you do before we went on the air, but I think they're out there going, he's got some law school connection. Who is this guy?
Well, I'm talking about the University of Dayton School of Law, and I was one of the original five faculty who started the law school in 1974, and I'm still teaching classes there, and this is my 43rd year.
UD. I'm sure we have a lot of listeners out there who have UD connections, and you're still doing it. You're still teaching?
I'm still teaching. I'm emeritus status, and I'm basically teaching the classes for a whole lot less money. But as I tell people, it's cheaper than drugs. That if I need to get the high, I can get that high in the classroom, and I'd have to resort to drugs to get a similar high.
Okay. What's your specialty?
Over the years, I've taught just about everything. I avoid tax. I avoid UCC, Uniform Commercial Code. Evidence, trial practice, civil procedure. I was acting dean for a while. I was ran the clinic. So I've done a lot of different things out there.
Gotcha. As we read the book, What Did You Do in the War, Sister? How Catholic Nuns in Belgium Defied and Deceived the Nazis in World War II, we get this historical overview where the Germans leave Belgium. And as I was reading the book, I thought, oh, great, they're gone. What are we going to talk about now? And then they come back. And this is scary.
Yeah, this is sort of the denouement of the book, or the most, the crises that occurs that has the biggest impact on Sister Christina. But everybody thought Belgium was liberated in September of 1944. And lots of material and food and clothing was starting to pour into the country, and everybody was giving a sigh of relief and thinking that the Germans were on their last legs. And as we later learned, their last major offensive of the war occurred in Belgium And they, again, brought their tanks through the Ardennes, which most people said, well, how do you bring tanks through there? And funnily, they didn't, the Allies didn't seem to learn their lesson because they did the exact same thing at the beginning of the war. And so they reinvaded. And the challenge for Sister Christina was Saint-Hubert was right in the path of the Germans. Now, we mostly know the story of Bastogne, which held out, the 101 Airborne held out in Bastogne and that. But Saint-Hubert was reoccupied by the Germans. And a lot of the materials that I have talk about that reoccupation of Saint-Hubert by the German army and then their ultimate second liberation that occurred.
And you have a character in the story who is one of the Jewish children who has been saved and kept in the convent, hiding under the disguise of being a little Catholic girl. And she has a very close connection with Christine. And there's some tragedy in this story, too.
There is some tragedy, although I like to think that in this is kind of a happy ending story in that the for the most part, the good people won here. The people who were doing their part and were successful, saved lives. But it was the several tragedies, a couple of heartaches for Sister Christina was not uncommon. I assume it wouldn't be uncommon that when you mentor somebody like Andre, that you become sort of a substitute mother for her and become very close. And so what was traumatic for Sister Christina was when the first liberation occurred, the Jewish organization responsible for relocating or finding displaced persons and getting together with their family came in and took Andre away. Andre agreed to go, and she left without saying goodbye to Sister Christina, and that was a hurt.
At the beginning of the book, you explain how you are a product of the parochial schools, how you've been associated for many years with the Catholic University. And then you talk about your own faith, and I found this somewhat surprising, but very honest of you and fascinating to me. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I am an atheist. I've had 19 years of Catholic education. I've had a minor in theology in at Georgetown. You were sort of required to have a minor in theology. Spent many years at the Catholic institution at the Marianist, and they're wonderful folks, having lots of dialogue, lots of debate with the brothers and the fathers there, and they're very open to that kind of discussion. So, and the discussion often is, how do you reconcile faith and reason? And I took you can't stance. Mm-hmm. You know, you either have faith or you don't. And I admire people who have faith, and I'm particularly admirable. I admire people who live up to their faith and act accordingly because of that faith. But I can't accept that belief. So the story, I said that at the beginning of the book, and to be honest with, I thought it lent some credibility to the story that I clearly would not naturally be an apologist for the Catholic Church and that I would have a more objective and you would almost might assume a negative view of the Catholic Church, but that if I admired what these sisters were doing, then you know it counts for something because of my philosophical background.
Throughout the book, Sister Christine is thanking the founder of the order for protecting them. You've got this very Catholic feeling throughout the story, and you nailed it. I mean, I would never guess that this was written by an atheist.
Well, because I do, you know, I really believe that the folks, the religious orders, are guided in large part by their faith. And my experience with the Marianists and the Sisters of Notre Dame is they are some wonderful people. They really are, they live up to the vows of poverty. They do wonderful things. They're great educators, and you can't help but admire them. I don't accept the theology. I can't do that, but I can certainly admire them as a people.
Were you an altar boy?
No, I wasn't. I was not an altar boy.
So you were already a rebel, even in grade school?
In grade school, I was a rebel in the second grade.
Okay.
When a sister started talking like you weren't saved, you couldn't go to heaven if you weren't Catholic. And I raised my hand and I said, that can't be. Are you saying my best friend isn't going to heaven because he's not Catholic? I just can't accept that.
In second grade you did this?
In the second grade, yeah.
I'm impressed.
It just didn't seem fair. I mean, that just didn't seem fair to me. And it still doesn't, obviously. And, of course, the Catholic Church has moved away from that hardline position over the years.
But was it a good experience being in the parochial schools for you?
It was. It was a good education. The sisters, looking back, gave me a good education. And I really appreciated the education with the Marianists at Chaminade. And then the Jesuits at Georgetown. They encouraged, unlike some religious groups, they encouraged questioning of the underlying fundamental positions of the church. Mm-hmm. And that. They encouraged you to question that. And I did. I did. As a result, when I pieced it all together, I came out and said, well, I just can't accept it. But they did encourage that kind of dialogue.
Well, I had Dominican nuns, and I loved them. They were fabulous. Mm-hmm. And I still have very fond memories of those nuns. Mm-hmm. And they were great. They were great teachers, and they really got me enthusiastic about learning and about particular subjects. They just really, really transmitted that energy. In third grade, I had a nun who would teach us new words all the time, words like prevarication and procrastination and debris, and words that as most third graders didn't know. And these words have stayed with me. I fell in love with language in third grade.
Yeah, that is, and their dedication is impressive. They were terribly dedicated to their task.
Mm. My guest is Dennis J. Turner. His book is What Did You Do in the War, Sister? How Catholic Nuns in Belgium Defied and Deceived the Nazis in World War II. Okay, so you'd never published a book like this. How did you do it?
One paragraph at a time. The way I tend to write is if I can get the first paragraph down and then it starts to process it, I think I dream about it at night, and then the next paragraph gets written, and then the next paragraph, and that goes on. And I think I experienced a little bit of what I've often heard authors experience, is the character starts to take over. You know, it's like Sister Christina starts telling me what to do. And then I had the benefit of Kathy, my wife, who not only did the first edit of the book, she was a great person to bounce ideas off, and she was kind and gentle enough that she would gently say, rather than say that was stupid, that's a stupid thing to try to put in, you know, she guided me, said I don't think, you know, it worked, and that was very helpful to me.
All right, so I guess that was the easy part, writing the book. What was the hard part? Was it getting it published? You're published by Cincinnati Book Publishing. How did you get a book published?
Well, I am self-publishing in a way. I, at 72, I didn't have the luxury of time to pass it on. And I had the luxury that I had some of the financial resources that I could pay people to do the self. A lot of people do self-publishing, but they have to do all that detailed stuff by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the luxury of being able to pay somebody. So you get the ISBN number, you get a designer, you get it on Amazon. I didn't want to have to do that. And so I had a contact to the Cincinnati Publishing and talked with them, and it seemed like it was going to be a good fit. And I think they did a nice job of laying it out and working with me to get it produced.
It's very nicely done. And I was not familiar with Cincinnati Book Publishing. Tell me about them.
Well, they do – that's – I think their primary business is to help self-pubs, people who want to publish books, and work with them to get them done. And it really is helpful because photography – I mean, there's so many issues that I would never had any – idea about if they didn't say, well, you know, how many pictures in its color or these kind of questions, the font and the page size and everything, I would have been a C on that. And they were very helpful in guiding me along those lines.
So in a way, they're kind of like agents too.
Yes. And then they help market the book. They out there. But by and large, I've been self-marketing. And again, the Turner luck, as I like to say, which has gone throughout this entire book, is the number of people and friends and acquaintances who come forward with contacts or ideas has just been amazing. Uh-huh. And so I've gotten a lot more publicity about this book than I have ever imagined.
I'm curious, how many did you publish in the first print run?
2,000.
2,000, okay. And some of those copies are waiting over at St. Mark Bookstore right now at 895 South Main Street in Centerville, where Dennis will be later this morning at 10 o'clock, June 2nd, Saturday morning. He'll be there from 10 until 1 o'clock doing a book presentation for his book, What Did You Do in the War, Sister? St. Mark Bookstore, 895 South Main Street in Centerville. What are you going to be talking about this morning over there? The same kind of stuff we're talking about or some different stuff?
Same kind of stuff, but usually that's people come by with questions and it's fun. And, you know, one of the things that I have discovered in these kind of venues, in which I don't give a formalized talk, is people come by and they want to tell their stories. And I like to listen because everybody has a story. And everybody likes to have somebody recognize their story, and I learn a lot. I'm, again, as a law professor, asking questions is what I do. And so I can ask the questions and get them to tell their stories. And I find that's the best part, is you meet some very, very interesting people with some very interesting stories.
I agree. We all have our stories to tell. Some of us are more eager to tell them than others. And I have to wonder, after your experience with this book, is this it? Is this the end of the road? Or are you going to somehow decide, I think I'm interested in writing another book about something else?
Vic, you just asked the question that seems to be asked at every event I go to. And I'll give you what happened when I was at the Oakwood Library. We'll give you sort of a feel for that. I usually do a little bit of song and dance. Well, I don't know, and how Kathy's been on this roller coaster ride. Well, during that presentation, when that question was asked, Kathy was in the back of the room at the table where she actually does the selling of the books. There's a very loud no came out. And I said, well, that sort of tells you where I am right now. I may have an idea for another book, but let me just work on this one now. I am, I'm getting a little long in the tooth, so who knows.
This was at the Wright Memorial Library?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's a good anecdote. The book is What Did You Do in the War, Sister? How Catholic Nuns in Belgium Defied and Deceived the Nazis in World War II. Dennis J. Turner wrote it, and he's been my guest on the Book Nook today. And Dennis, if you do put out that next book, we'll be waiting. Otherwise, if I hear a big no, we'll just leave it at that.
Well, Vic, I couldn't imagine anybody I would be happier to have read another book than you read the books, because you are so thorough in your analysis and reading and a great questioner. I appreciate it.
Well, you're very kind. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McEwens.